Hello, and welcome to My Favorite Murder. My name is Danielle Henderson. I am the guest host this week. I am also the co-host of the I Saw What You Did podcast here on the Exactly Right Network. And I am so excited to bring you some stories today. I've been friends with Karen for a while, and I'm a fan, of this podcast and a fan of this work in general. George is a new friend, but I just really, I wanted to pick some stories that kind of give a feel for not just what the show is, but also what their personalities are, because I think their personalities is what brings most of us to the show. I originally wanted to pick the Mary Vincent story, because when I first heard that story, I texted Karen like 8 times throughout and was just like, I cannot believe this. What? Oh my God. I cannot believe this. What? It is the pinnacle of stories to me. One of the most harrowing stories I've ever heard. But luckily there are several of those in the catalog of My Favorite Murder. So let's get to it. So I picked for George's story, Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm, from episode 10. It's an early episode, which I think is always fun to revisit. And I love this story because it kind of has, it has such a distinct mystery element to it. And it really has a questioning element to this story that leaves you wondering what actually happened. I love the way Georgia tells the story. It's just so full of humor. And I think that that's also part of the reason why I chose this story, is that you really get to see the back and forth between Karen and Georgia in the early iteration of the show. And their personalities are just on full display. So without further ado, here's Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm.
Okay, you're gonna go first this week.
I'll go first this week. So we're ready for our favorite murder.
Are you ready?
All right. So this week we're doing. I picked a topic and then I hated it. So I said, Karen, what's your dream topic?
Do you remember what the topic was before?
It was vintage unsolved.
Oh right.
And then I got really angry and was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And I said, Karen, have you picked yours yet? And you said no. And I said,
no,
what's
of
your
course
dream
not.
Topic?
And then I just didn't answer you because I was like, MYOB.
Is that
mind your own business? No. No, not at all.
You said weird murders.
Yes.
Which like basically is we've done so many already.
I mean, we've also done like kids killing kids. We've done so many things that like we're the category idea.
Yeah.
We're just trying to organize
us.
Our thoughts.
Totally. It's trying to help us like go down a path that's not an infinite path.
Yes.
Okay.
Huh?
So
but also like what murder isn't weird.
Ultimately, oh, totally.
It's kind of an aberration just in it. But you know.
Well I thought there was a couple that I wanted to do. And I also don't want to do one that everyone like there's something about the maybe it's just the Facebook group, but like everyone in that fucking group knows every murder.
Yes.
Like they know everything, which is like so fun, but I don't want to disappoint them.
Yes. Same.
You know what I mean? So I picked one. I was going to do the Tommen Schuude case.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where it's an unsolved case of an unidentified man found dead in 1948 in Australia. And in his, he washed up on the beach and in his pocket was a piece of paper with the phrase Tommen Schuude, which meaning ended or finished in Persian, printed on a little scrap of paper. And they don't know who he is, where he came from, what his deal is. It's a fascinating case if you don't know it, which everyone probably knows it.
And so, it's still unsolved, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so is this one, the one that I picked as my favorite weird murder, called Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm? Is that yours?
I just listened to a different podcast about this.
It's great. It's also called the Hagley Woods Mystery sometimes. This is a good one. So in April 1943, which is obviously in the middle of World War II, 4 boys from Stourbridge in the UK were poaching when they came.
Can you say that one more time?
Stourbridge, UK. They were poaching. They came across a large witch elm. It's spelled W-I-T-C-H or W-Y-C-H in different postings. I can't really tell. I think it's W-I-T-C-H. And they found a witch elm on an estate belonging to a lord. They thought it was a good place to hunt birds' nests. And so they tried to climb into the tree to investigate, and they found a skull. Mm. And they thought it was an animal, and then they saw human teeth and hair attached to this. Mm-mm. And they had found a human skull. So they went, they were like, here's a great idea. Let's not tell anyone because we'll get in trouble for being on the Lord's land. Like, boys. You guys, if you ever find something, say something, or you look fucking suspicious.
Your parents won't be mad at you for being on someone's land if you find a skull.
Everyone knows lords are dicks.
Look, we've all dealt with asshole lords before.
We've all trespassed on land that belongs to lords. And if you find a body, you should tell someone. So the youngest kid was like, of course it's the youngest kid. He's like, I'm scared, mommy. Yeah.
Mommy.
And he told his parents, and the police checked the trunk of the tree. They found an almost complete human skeleton, a shoe, a gold wedding ring, and some fragments of clothing. And then on further investigation, a severed hand was found buried in the ground near the tree. The body was examined by Professor James Webster, and he established that the skeleton was a female who had been dead for at least 18 months. And at the time of death must have been around October 1941. He discovered, this is the best, a section of taffeta lodged in her mouth, suggesting she had died from asphyxiation. And I wrote, or from fashion, in my notes.
She died from the 80s.
Oh, Georgia.
Georgia, for it. Go do it.
Doing it. The measurement of the trunk, which the body was placed in, made him think that she must have been placed there still warm after the killing, as she could not have fit in once rigor mortis had taken hold. Rigor mortis is, I'm fascinated by it. It's just, oh my God.
Because it sets in, but then it goes away, right?
I think it goes away after like 10 days, but I feel like you can also break it.
Oh.
With enough force. Listen, everyone put on the Facebook group whether or not this is true or not.
Yeah, what do you know about rigor mortis?
Clearly someone knows something. That's a good podcast too, by the way.
So it's our offshoot podcast, Someone Knows Something About Rigor Mortis.
Okay. So the woman's murder was in the midst of World War II in the UK, which clearly had a lot of action going on. So it hampered the investigation. Police could tell from the items found what the woman looked like, but so many people reported missing during the war, they really couldn't tell, like, find out who it was. They did a nationwide search of dental practices, which came up with nothing, which I feel like in 1941, the nationwide search of dental practices was not very thorough.
Yeah, you're like calling up on one of those like crank wall phones of like, you know,
Hey,
Strawbridge 39478.
Have you seen a cap on incisor 3? You
know, like, we don't do those here.
Yeah. Bye.
And it's also a barbershop.
I love our dental. Hey, we are. Yeah.
They're British people that talk like they're from the Bronx. Perfect.
From a movie from the Bronx.
This is good radio.
But again, just the facts here, you guys. That's all you got. My favorite is the facts and only the facts. This is a real boring podcast. So people eventually kind of forgot about the woman in the tree until the graffiti started.
Yes.
What an ominous fucking line.
This is the beginning of Banksy.
So someone wrote, "Who put Lulabelle down the witch elm?"
Ooh.
In graffiti. And then someone wrote, "The Hagley Wood Bella." Then someone wrote, "Who put Bella in the witch elm?" And the graffiti appeared on walls throughout the West Midlands, which is near where it happened, seemingly by the same hand, which is a fucking, I love handwriting analysis so much.
Me too.
The graffiti was last painted onto the side of a 200-year-old obelisk, which is like spooky as fuck.
Yeah.
On the 18th of August, 1999, in white paint. That's some Toynbee tile shit.
Yes, you know that's right. It just continues on.
What the fuck? So let's see. Okay. A couple theories that, the hand buried close by could have been a hand of glory, which I actually talked about recently on Slumber Party. It's a dried and pickled hand of a man who has been hanged, often specified as being the left hand. Or if the man was hanged for murder, the hand that did the deed. And old European beliefs attributed the great powers to a hand of glory combined with a they made a fucking hand of someone who was hanged into a candle. And so when people would break into someone's house, they would bring it with them for good luck.
Oh,
that's
shit.
Pretty much what it was. So it was a cultist type of thing, which is like, look, there's a hand buried nearby. What does that mean?
I feel like the glory part is a bit of a misnomer. It's horrifying. It's a disembodied hand.
The hand of stolen. Horrifying. Turn into it. Like, they put the wicks on the tip of the fingers. Like, if someone broke into my house with that, I would run. So, of course, you would get away with it.
Take all of my jewels.
Bye. I'd be like, bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
You got me.
Later days. So I read this part from, this is all from like Wikipedia and random like websites. This is from the Unredacted. It wasn't until 1953 when journalist Wilford Jones started to write about the old case, that interest was revived. And he would soon receive the first solid lead in nearly a decade. Whoa. This is in 1953. There was a letter signed only Anna offered new details of what had happened to Bella. According to the letter, Bella, I love this, had been murdered because of her involvement with a Nazi spy ring operating in the Midlands in the early 1940s.
Yes.
Hundreds of German spies were captured in Britain during the war, and the Midlands would have been a valuable source of intelligence because of its prevalence of munitions factories.
Wow.
Really fucking cool. So the journalist...
You never think of England as having spies like that. It's like, yeah. You think of, because it's an island over by itself.
Yeah.
How did they get there?
Well, this is one of the theories. No. I didn't write this down, but this is one of the theories. Okay. Is that she parachuted in and somehow ended up in the trunk of the tree, which... Oh, bullshit on that theory.
Maybe
she parachuted in and they found her and killed her and put her in the tree.
The idea that you would parachute in to be a spy and you would parachute down into the
forest,
the trunk of a tree. Yeah. You're the dumbest, unluckiest spy who's the worst at parachuting.
Listen, she's in a plane. She gets scared. So she grabs a handful of her taffeta, stuffs it in her mouth, jumps
up. She doesn't scream too loud.
On her way down, hits her arm. Her hand comes off. The force buries it in the ground. This is all absolutely feasible.
It's doable. Wait a second. What material? Taffeta is like prom dresses. Taffeta isn't parachutes,
I think,
right?
No, taffeta. I feel like it's an underskirt material.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe it's a lacy collar.
Okay.
Like a high, like Victorian lacy collar.
It's not like nylon. We're not talking. It's a different thing than parachutes.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I thought I had a theory, but.
You know, at the same time, though, these stories are passed down so long that someone could have said it's taffeta and that stuck.
True.
Which is the problem with these old crimes is like, they just get told so many times that these things become fact. So I'm going to say that she had parachute nylon stuffed in her mouth.
Let's change the story to
change
work
it.
For us.
We're flipping the script. Okay. So then the journalist got a letter from this woman, Anna, claiming Bella had died after getting involved in a World War II Nazi spy ring. And she said, finish your articles on the Witch Elm crime by all means. They're interesting to your readers, but you will never solve the mystery. The one person who could give the answer is now beyond the jurisdiction of the earthly courts. That's a great way to say someone's dead. We're now called my favorite beyond the jurisdiction of the earthly courts.
God, the affair is, earthly courts.
I know. The affair is closed and involves no witches, black magic, or moonlit rites. Basically, this witch is like, I know what fucking happened.
Shit.
So,
do you think that witch, did you say witch or bitch?
That bitch knows what happened. No witches, black magic, or moonlight rites. Like, she's saying it wasn't witchcraft.
Oh, because it is in the forest.
I know. Creepy.
Yeah.
And anyway. She's found in a fucking trunk of a tree. Like, that's some, what was the show recently with,
American
Woody
Horror
Harrelson?
Story?
No, Woody Harrelson.
Oh, True Detective.
That's some True Detective shit right there.
Season one, baby.
Season one. Fuck season two.
Season two is slop. Although we did see Colin Farrell at the movie theater the other night. And
did?
I almost told him your performance in True Detective season two was masterful.
The only saving grace of that show, that
truly.
Episode, season.
And my girl, Rachel McAdams. I do love her. No?
She just bores me. She just talks like this all the time and she bores me.
I know, but she has perfect, like, she always has a good bob.
Yeah. And she's a great bop.
She has a nice tall forehead. I'm jealous of her face.
You love a tall forehead.
I really do, because mine is like a three head. It is the shortest. All my bangs are an atrocity. Nothing works. Nothing works.
You should shave the front part of your forehead. Like the
like
beginning.
Like an Edwardian.
Yep. Yeah. Just get it waxed and
that's
it'll look like.
Idea. I know. Oh my God. I want to barf.
Like how you used to cut your Barbie's hair off in the front for bang. I'm like, here's bang. It's still growing.
You know, I used to do baby bangs like in the early 90s when I was a big drunk.
Like little foofies.
I can't tell you how my face looked like a straight up full moon. I looked like the blood moon walking around working at the Gap.
You talk about your photos from when you were younger so much, and I've never seen them. I'm dying to see them.
I've scrubbed the internet of them.
Fuck. Please don't scrub my brain of them. Okay.
Sorry.
No, this is the best part. After subsequent correspondence, Anna revealed herself to be a woman named Una Mossop. And told the full story. She said her husband, Jack, worked on a local munitions factory, again, the munitions factory, in the early 1940s and come into some money after meeting a mysterious Dutchman. He later admitted to Una that the Dutchman was a Nazi agent, and Jack had been passing him information about the local industrial sites. Listen, uh-oh. You asshole.
Yeah.
This is why we fucking lost the war. No, I'm kidding.
We didn't.
Actually won the war.
Good news, Georgia.
Hey, guys. I'm totally kidding. Let's see. So, which in turn was passed to another agent posing as a cabaret performer at local theaters. The Midlands had been bombarded by the Luftwaffe in the early 40s, and such information would have been invaluable to the Nazis to target their raids when they would have done the most damage to Britain's war effort. One day, Jack met his contact at a pub close to Hagley Wood. He was arguing with a Dutch woman. This Dutchman was arguing with a Dutch woman. He ordered Jack to drive them both out to the Clent Hills, but the argument had grown extremely violent and the Dutch agent strangled the woman in the car. Fearing for his own life, Jack helped carry the body into the nearby Hagley Woods, where the pair buried it in the hollow of an old tree elm. That sounds reasonable.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
that's
it sounds
believable.
Insane, but right. Like a reasonable explanation.
Also, sorry to say, but it's kind of a good idea to bury a body inside of a tree.
Totally. It's like now how they're doing they're doing burials when you can be like, I want to be a pod, and you can get buried in the woods now.
Oh, right. But it's against your will.
But it's the only difference. Listen, stick with me.
It's an eco-burial, right, but you don't have a choice in the matter.
This totally makes sense to me, and I was going to say something else, and I forgot. So, yeah. I feel like there's so many murders that are solved because an ex-girlfriend, a jilted ex-lover, ex-girlfriend is like, hey, FYI, here's what happened.
Totally.
I didn't say because I was scared for my life, which I totally believe. Like, you eventually tell.
Yeah. I mean, because that guy had a lot to lose. If he was, like, passing info.
Oh, treason.
Then if she said anything, yeah, he probably told her, I'll kill you if you... I mean, like...
Yeah. She thought he would die. She didn't want him to die either. She loved him.
Yeah.
And then he slept with her sister, and she was like, listen, fuck this dude.
Is that the reason why she's...
No, I'm totally guessing this. No, ni amo. Okay, so Una's husband was apparently so traumatized by the brutal murder of Bella that he had a nervous breakdown, tormented by horrific visions of a woman's skull in a tree, and he was institutionalized in 1941 and apparently died later that year. So that sounds totally plausible and feasible.
And it sounds like it happened immediately. Like he went through the trauma and then just freaked out.
It turns out, nobody knew this, but Nazis are assholes.
Oh.
Yeah.
They should have mentioned that in the 40s
they
so that
people.
America could have gotten involved in that war earlier.
Ooh, get
political. I said it. You heard me and I said it.
It's like everyone from that era is dead. And everyone's like, I don't care that you said it. It's true.
There's like one 90-year-old veteran that's like, How dare you? I came here to listen to a motor podcast.
Not a rant against the Luftwaffe. So that sounds... I like that theory. Again, I like it, and it fits very well, and it could have changed a lot, and who knows if it's true, but it's a good one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you guys want to... There's actually a good photo of the skull. If you go online, it's called this is the Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm or the Hagley Woods Mystery. You can see some cool photos from back then.
Every time I watch like British TV, I want to go there because it's such a rich and storied past. But stuff like that, like you don't even think about it. Aside from the fact that they got the shit bombed out of them during World War II. And it was like total chaos and insanity every day.
Can you imagine these proper British people got the shit bombed out of them.
And they didn't react. Like, what I love is that it's so British, that whole keep calm, carry on, where it was just like, nobody was allowed to be like, can you believe this shit or freak out or anything? They were all like, all right, are you ready for tea?
Well, even the army, the British army was like, here are these rules that we have to follow. And I think that's why we had to step in, is that we're like, there are these rules of war, but these Nazis are not following them.
No.
And you think that like combat is this like old tradition. It's not anymore. But, you know, these proper British people, God bless them.
I know.
And just the fucking amount of civilians that were just game is awful.
It's crazy.
On both sides.
World War II. I will fall into any World War II black hole, that whole thing. Anytime it's a people going back. What I really like is when people go back and try to talk to German people, citizens today.
Oh my Lord.
From that era and how defensive and freaked out they get.
Yeah.
What an incredible scar on the history of German people and how terrible they feel and how it's just a strange
thing.
Well,
if you ask them, it wasn't their fault. They weren't, you know, they weren't part of it. They weren't supporting it. I mean, I totally understand why someone like Adolf Hitler would have looked so, appealing in the beginning.
Yep.
And
that was a country that was like on its knees for years and years and years.
Because we made them do that after World War I. We spanked them.
Yeah.
Not that they didn't deserve it.
But it's just that thing of like, keep an eye out for somebody that likes a scapegoat. It's usually, scapegoats are usually a minority person.
Yeah.
They can't speak up for themselves.
I'm going to say it, what you are not saying.
Go ahead. Donald Trump. Let's not get into it. That motherfucker.
Yeah.
Oh no, we just lost thousands and thousands of listeners.
Good. I don't want them. Those are the people who come after us. Those are not our 2000 Facebook group followers.
Please. Are you kidding me? That'd be unbelievable.
So I just love that one's weird to me because I just love that she was found in a tree and it's just so fascinating to me.
It also feels like that's the kind that you feel like in maybe 5 years, they'll have that solved somehow.
I feel like it's one of those ones that it's solved in that there's some obvious explanation, that one I just read, but it's too late. It'll never be. And then isn't it weird when you hear about vintage murders and you're like, he's 67 now and he got arrested. And you're like, oh my God, I thought he'd be dead.
Yes.
He's 67 or whatever.
But that guy, I mean, that's a tough arrow pointing straight to the guy that immediately has a nervous breakdown and basically dies.
I mean, I kind of feel badly for that guy because, yeah, what is he going to be like? No Nazi who just killed your like counterpart.
Yeah.
I'm not going to help you.
Right.
Of course he is.
Of course he is. And now he's stuck.
Like he can't tell anyone because he's being treasonous.
He's treasonous.
Bitch.
Guys, do not sell your government secrets.
Whoa, what a great story. So my pick for Karen is from episode 45, and it is The Tale of Lord Lucan. I think I picked both of these because I really enjoy the mystery elements to them. But this one in particular has so many incredible details. And to hear Karen tell it you just get sucked into the narrative of what could possibly have happened, even though we all kind of know what happened. but I think it's just a really important, an important example of what white guys can get away with, I think. So here we have, from episode 45, the story of Lord Lucan.
So I have, because of watching The Killing Season and how heavy it is and how it feels like everyone in the world is a serial killer by the time you're halfway through with it, some ways is a fun feeling.
It's fun, isn't it?
I like it.
And yet you're still alive.
we made it, everybody. Yeah. So I switched over as a palate cleanser. I started watching The Crown, which is a wonderful Netflix series.
British procedural? It sounds British. Is it British?
It's the story of Queen Elizabeth.
I figured. God, I'm so smart.
The newest one. So in a way, it is kind of a British procedural.
Wait, it's the newest show about
like how she got became the queen and what her life was like privately.
She's like a badass.
She's a total badass. Yeah. There's parts in it. I want the Crown TV show to come out with their own book on how to be politely assertive.
Yeah.
Because that's her. And also I want them to come out with the color of lipstick that she's wearing because it's this perfect shade of pinkish red that would actually look good. I can't wear red because my teeth are as yellow as little corn niblets.
You're very fair.
I'm very fair with red in my skin. So red lipstick on me makes me look like I have been smoking crack in the alley.
I look like a fucking, what do they call them? A rockabilly. And it's obnoxious.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is like this muted brownish pink lipstick.
I bet they make it for her. And that's not even a thing you can fucking buy.
You know what?
Well, we have a fucking lip gloss that was made for us too that girl sent us.
That's right.
Remember? So the queen, I'm sorry. It's not that fucking special.
But I want the queens because we've started doing coke before.
back to being 14.
So I blended into this very British kind of fancy regal area.
Yeah, like controlled.
Yes. And aristocratic, which is, I mean, like if I was in that time, I would be like truly the dishwasher in the bottom part of the basement. Like,
oh, governor.
That's Karen.
Do you need a candlestick?
And I wouldn't, but with an Irish accent, which for some reason I can't do right now. So I decided that my murder is going to be that of the infamous story of Lord Lucan. Have you ever heard of him?
I don't think so.
Okay, this one's pretty good because it involves British aristocracy and a disappearance.
Ooh, you know I love disappearances.
All right, so, and also I was going to do this story after, remember when we did Harmontown and then we met that British couple outside on the street and they were on their honeymoon.
Oh my God. They were so sweet.
They were so sweet and they were just getting tattoos and they were having like this amazing honeymoon and they'd come to see us.
And they didn't even ask for a photo, which is like,
they didn't ask. They,
you know, Americans do that.
Yeah. They didn't want a photo. They kind of want us to go away a little bit, but they were like, hi, we came to see you. We came from England to see you, which meant the world to me. We didn't get their names.
Nope.
But hi, shout out if you're still listening.
Sweet angels.
Pip, pip.
That wasn't a fucking pander to the audience when I said sweet baby angels.
Just no, not. That was natural. It felt very natural.
Thank y'all.
So I was thinking of doing Lord Lucan after we met them of like, hey, this is shout out to you. But that was what, 6 months ago or something? So I brought this Word document back out and began to fill it out again. So here's the story of this guy. It was born John Bingham, he was born on December 18th, 1934 to an aristocratic family in Marylebone, which is the funniest name for, it's a neighborhood, I guess, in London.
Oh, you're going to get, I don't care what you say next, you're going to get a correction about like what it
pronunciation,
is.
Pronunciation, the
it's
area.
It's not in London.
It's actually in Wales.
It's not a neighborhood, it's a fucking.
It's fucking in New York.
Square, and it's a town, it's fucking in New York. Bye.
Yeah, this whole I once again am flying in the face of logic. Man. And just trying to be British once again.
Aim for the fucking nose.
Aim for the stars. Aim for that button nose. So this John Bingham, during World War II, when he was a boy, he was evacuated out of London, out of Marylebone. They're gonna be like, it's pronounced Millibin.
Yeah, totally.
He was evacuated to Wales and then to Canada. And he got to live with his rich, like, friends of family.
That sounds nice.
Distant relatives, yeah, who are, like, crazy rich. But then when he came back to England when the war was over, he was sent to Eton College. Now, I was thinking about this in my head, but I didn't look it up. I think over there, Eton is, like, a boarding school that's, like, grammar in high school.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily a college like we think of college.
They have like finishing school, right? Where like you pass your, and again,
where you put a book on your head.
Save it if you want to fucking email, text us that we're, tweet us that we're wrong. It's like a,
someone in England tell us what Eton College is.
No, I don't care. No, okay. I do care. No, okay. Don't tell me.
But I think it's
like a finishing school. No, I'm going to keep saying that till you agree with me.
This time you said it like you'd been thinking about it and now you've decided it's a finishing school.
Yeah.
I think it's like high school and perhaps
like a boarding school.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Anyhow.
Finally, we agree.
So when he was there, he supplemented his pocket money with, he was a bookie.
Oh, and so, that's cool, right?
Yeah, I think it's very cool.
I do too.
He had a secret bank account.
Oh my God.
And he made money.
As a kid?
As a kid.
My grandfather was a bookie.
For real?
Yeah. Barber. No. The barbershop front.
Barber, quote unquote.
Bookie.
Nice.
Anyway, sorry.
So this kid, he would leave the school grounds, go to horse races, take bets, and he was like the school bookie.
That's
badass.
So cool.
Love it. Well, the bad part, the uncool part, is that he turned out to be a terrible compulsive gambler.
Oh, wait.
Later on.
Take that back.
But when he's a kid, that's cute.
Yeah.
So he got the nickname Lucky Lucan after winning 26,000 pounds at the card game Chemin de Fer in Le Tour, nope. Le Touquet.
None of that's real.
None of it is meaningful to me in any way. But he won a game, a bunch of pounds. And so that's what made him think, I'm lucky and I should be doing this all right. The time. So when he got out of school, he was in the army for a little bit, and then he started a job as a merchant banker. But he had very expensive tastes because he was still an aristocrat. His parents were very, very, what do you call that? I was going to say staunch, but that's from Grey Gardens. It's, they didn't spend a lot of money. They were like religious.
When you try to, I'm like making a gesture on my chest.
Yeah, like frugal.
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 There we go.
This gesture worked for me.
How long did that fucking take? If this podcast is 2 hours long, it's because we're trying to remember words that neither of us can.
Who could enjoy this?
I don't know.
It's madness.
Even Steven is like, can you
get your fucking shit together? Okay. So he had all very expensive tastes because he was still an aristocrat at the end of the day, and he was raised, you know, by rich people in North America. So he had taste for the best Russian vodka. He liked to race power boats.
And
Wikipedia, donate to Wikipedia, by the way, if only just $3.
Oh, can you donate to Wikipedia?
Yeah. Yeah. It's
Is that
all,
a thing that they're,
yeah, they're actually having like, they're kind of like public television right now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they're trying to get people to give them money. Because they need to stick around.
I have so many questions. I mean, I love Wikipedia, but I won't ask them right now.
If you click on there right now, the thing will come up to say, please give us $3.
Okay.
And then we'll do it.
That's, yeah.
I mean, it seems fair for all the shit they give me.
Oh, my God. The hours I spent when I had the desk job looking at unsolved murders and serial killers. Yeah. And,
love it. So anyway, this guy, basically, he's living the life. He likes the best of all things. I was just going to say, at the end of this sentence, they were like, he had the best tastes. He loved the best, you know, he raced boats. He loved Russian vodka and smart cars, which I think in England probably means smart, like cool cars.
Oh,
but here
smart
means tiny toy looking cars that are the stupidest looking cars you could drive.
I just time traveled, too, because those didn't exist.
Right.
Like, how cool would that be if he were just like...
They're like, he invented the smart car.
Yeah.
All right, anyway. He was also very charismatic. He was 6'2", with a quote from Wikipedia, a luxuriant mustache.
Oh,
like
Stevens.
And he was once considered to play the role of James Bond.
Oh, shit.
So he's that... You see a picture of him on Wikipedia. He's pretty cute.
Is he hot as fuck?
Yeah, yeah. He's very British, aristocratic looking. Kind of like...
Don't piss
anyone off. Pointy nose. I won't... It's high class. You know
what
I mean?
It's a British thing.
Pointy nose and kind of like, he looks like he'd be like, very good.
Hey, man, my husband is the spitting image of Prince William. So
yeah, that's
what
right.
am I going to?
That's exactly
Clearly,
right.
I'm into British dudes.
Yeah, no complaints. Also, at one point, he was ranked among the top 10, the world's top 10 backgammon players. So there
That's
you have it.
Kind of cool.
Badass.
Yeah.
Talk about sex.
I mean, I don't know what backgammon is exactly, but I bet it's hard.
It's, you know what it is? It's like chess for drunk people is what it is. All right.
It still sounds like, I don't think I like chess for drunk people to me is like bingo. Connect four is chess.
That's right.
For drunk people.
Yeah. Bingo. Okay, so he meets his wife, Veronica Duncan, at a golf club function, and they get married on November 20th, 1963. And when they get married, so Lord Lucan's finances when he was a young man and he was gambling so much, it got a little iffy in there because he was just like going for it. And mm-hmm. like, I'm in a boat race. I have to have an Aston Martin. You know, he was like mm-hmm. living the life and spending all that money. Mm-hmm. So when he marries Veronica Duncan, his father gives him what was called a marriage settlement. Mm. So he gets a big chunk of money to buy a house, to prepare for having kids, like this whole, so he's basically kind of like up in the black again.
Sexist. Got it.
2 months after he gets married, I called him Old Man Lucan. Old Man Lucan dies of a stroke. And so John Bingham inherits £250,000 and his father's titles, which are Earl of Lucan, Baron Lucan of Castlebar, Baron Lucan of Melcombe Lucan, and Baronet Bingham of Castlebar.
I don't know what any of this means.
It's meaningless. So,
cue the mean emails.
It's not meaningless.
It's super meaningless. Don't shoot foxes, right, everybody? Okay. So, the problem is that he has a very serious gambling problem. So at first it was hot and cute and he's James Bond. And after a while, it's like, put the fucking backgammon down. What are you doing? And he's still spending money like an aristocrat. So he's like, you know, he's got a open account at Savile Row Tailors. You know what I mean? Like people are making bespoke clothing for him.
Bespoke.
And, yeah.
Look at you, Karen.
I know. I want to be rich really bad.
Do you?
Really bad.
Really?
Not just rich though. I want to like be wealthy. I want to be like Lord Lucan. I want to be an aristocrat.
What would you do? What would you like?
I guess I would just drink and smoke cigarettes all day.
Because you can just do it at that point. Because
yeah, you can kind of. Well, it's the same thing you can do if you were basically a bum.
Remember that intervention where the woman had like inherited so much money that she was like, why should I not be an alcoholic? And then they were going to take her to a rehab that was like a five hour flight, but she insisted on getting a limo because she wanted to bring her cats with her. So she put her cats in the limo.
No!
Oh my God, it was a mess.
Holy shit. She took a cat road trip?
Yeah, she like put cat boxes in the limo. Like she's me if I just had a shit were going for it. And like no one could say anything to her because like she wasn't going to lose anything because she was.
Did it work? Did she get sober?
I don't know if hopefully there's a follow up. I don't know.
Oh man.
I stopped watching that because it's real depressing.
It turns out she ate all those cats. She got really drunk and then she got hungry and she ate those cats.
Oh, this poor baby. I mean, sorry. Fucking.
No.
Right field.
Loving it.
Left field.
There's a downside to being an addict. I think we all know this. We've tried to tell you over and over.
Yeah.
Okay, so he and his wife have three kids, George and Camilla, and a third one that for some reason isn't on this list.
And some other, you know, the youngest kid never matters. Am I wrong?
Yeah, seriously. I'm living that life.
That's why we're murder podcasters.
Yeah, that's why we're doing what we do. So Veronica is struggling because she also has three kids in this very short amount of time, of course. Ugh. So she's struggling with postnatal depression.
Honey.
And Lord Lucan takes her for treatment at a psychiatric clinic. She refused to be admitted, but she did agree to home visits from a psychiatrist and taking a course of antidepressants. So she's trying to take care of it, but she won't like, you know, really go take a full break or whatever. She's like, I can handle this. Well, then that combined with the pressures of maintaining their finances and I read this thing. I didn't include it, but there was a thing of like how he would spend his days.
Oh my God.
It's so hilarious because he would like get up and eat breakfast and then go to his gaming club and just gamble all afternoon.
All he did was gamble.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he was probably drinking too.
Of course. And then he would come home and get dressed and then put on like his tuxedo to go out.
Reeking of cigarettes, probably.
Oh yeah.
Ugh.
And you can't wash that off after a while. And then he just went out to drink and eat and smoke and gamble more. That's all he did all the time.
I would have, that's not postnatal depression. That's fucking depression.
Yeah.
That she had.
Because she was like, what the fuck?
This is not what I fucking
so
went to finishing school for.
So basically in the 2 weeks after a very strained family Christmas in 1972, Lord Lucan moved out. And then they get into this bitter custody battle. And the justice awards custody to Veronica.
Divorce like didn't happen back then.
Yeah, it wasn't good. And I'm sure for aristocrats.
And you could push him off the couch. Elvis is ripping up Karen's notes.
My precious writing. Okay. So she is awarded custody of the three kids, and that's all he wanted. And so
why would he want just to fuck with her, right?
No. He really, I'm sure, really loved his children, and it was very important to him. But also, I think it was part of this thing that he didn't think she was a fit mother, knowing that she had postnatal depression. I think he was partly worried, and then also partly he was an addict and needed to control things, maybe. Mm. I don't know. There's something going on. He gets awarded like every other weekend visit, and he gets really obsessive about it. So he starts spying on her to prove she's an unfit mother. He's recording their phone conversations. He becomes fixated on her and what's happening. He also is, his drinking gets really bad, and his gambling, he goes crazy with the gambling, and all of his friends are like, he's in a downward spiral. And then all of a sudden, the week of November 7th in 1974, he seems to like suddenly pull it together. Hmm. And there's a couple firsthand stories of people who like had dinner with him, and they try to talk to him about what's going on with the kids, and he changes the topic to politics. And so they're like, oh, maybe he's rounded the corner. Maybe it's out of his system.
Yeah.
So on the evening of November 7th, 1974, he had a bunch of plans with people that he just didn't show up. And that night, the children's nanny, Sandra Rivett, puts the younger children to bed. And at about 8:55, she asks Veronica if she'd like a cup of tea. And so she heads downstairs to the basement kitchen. So there, that's a fucking sweet ass mansion. Yeah. I'll go down to the maid's kitchen. Yeah. I'm not going to use your nice high class kitchen to make tea. So she goes downstairs to the basement kitchen to make Veronica some tea. And as she enters the room, she is bludgeoned to death with a lead pipe, a piece of bandaged lead pipe. And her killer places her body in a canvas mail sack. So meanwhile, upstairs, Lady Lucan wonders what's delaying the nanny. So she walks down the first floor stairs to see what's happened. Mm-hmm. And she calls from the top part of the stairs, she calls down to Rivet and to see what's going on. And the guy comes up and attacks her with the lead pipe as well.
Oh my God.
And she starts screaming for her life. The attacker tells her to shut up. And that's when Lady Lucan knows, she tells the cops later, that she knows it's her husband.
So she survives. This guy's got like a mask on or something.
I think the lights were out. Like it was dark. So she's kind of calling down. She doesn't know what's going on. And then this guy comes up.
Scary.
And she thinks she's just getting attacked. And then she realizes it's her husband, according to her. Mm-hmm. So they get into this fight. She bites his fingers. He throws her face down in the carpet, and she manages to turn around and squeeze his testicles.
Good girl.
Releasing Stephen. Stephen just really felt that.
Yeah.
And causing him to release his grip on her throat and give up the fight. She asks where Rivet is, and Lucan was at first evasive, then eventually admits that he just killed her.
Fuck.
So what they believe is that he thought it was Veronica walking into the basement kitchen.
Oh, shit.
He was trying to kill his wife, and he accidentally killed the nanny. So this is according to Lady Lucan. So Lady Lucan is terrified. She tells him she'll help him escape if he would just... she's trying to get... She says, I'll help you escape. You just have to stay here for a couple days and hide out and allow my injuries to heal, because she's been hit with the lead pipe and everything.
Oh, my God.
So Lucan, she walks upstairs. Oh, I'm sorry. Lord Lucan, the oldest daughter, wakes up. So he goes to put her to bed. And then the wife, Veronica, goes in to the bedroom, lays down. She's bleeding. And he puts down towels for her and it's like, don't get the bedding stained with blood.
Weird.
So he asks her, does she have any barbiturates? He goes into the bathroom to get a towel.
and supposedly clean her face. And that's when Lady Lucan realizes that he won't be able to hear her if he's in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And so she runs out of the house.
With her kids still there, though?
Yeah. But she, I think she knew that he didn't want that it was about her and that the attack was about her.
Right.
Because she also did report earlier that he had once hit her with a cane and once tried to push her down the stairs. So there he had gotten physical with her before. But he, I think she trusted that he wasn't going to harm their children.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
That's what it seemed like. So she runs out of the house and she runs to a nearby public house called the Plumber's Arms.
Oh, when we're in England, let's go get a drink there.
We have to go to a pub called the Plumber's Arms. Yeah. So what, like big hairy arms?
Hairy, but like.
With a tattoo?
What kind of bulldog tattoo? Is that?
Yeah, a bulldog would be good.
Yeah.
Or.
An anchor, of course.
Of course, an anchor. Or maybe just a Queen Elizabeth's face.
I mean, she's a badass.
Everybody loves her.
Everyone loves. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So the police, they call the police. The police go to the house. But meanwhile, Lord Lucan has called his own mother and tells her of a terrible catastrophe that's happened at his wife's home. He tells his mother, you have to come here and get the children. Then he drives a borrowed car to his friend's house in Uckfield, East Sussex. And then hours later, he leaves that property, leaves the car there, and he's never seen again and has never been seen since.
No.
Swear to God.
No.
So that car was found.
He's the one missing?
Yes. He's the one missing. He disappeared. So.
No, I was not expecting that.
Yeah. James Bond is out and about.
Dude.
The car was found abandoned in New Haven, and the interior was stained with blood. And the trunk had a piece, our friends in England, had a piece of bandaged lead pipe similar to the one found at the crime scene. So there's one that a nanny was killed with that was left at the crime scene. And there's another one that's in this borrowed car.
And we don't know why was all the blood in the car? And we don't know what that led.
He was covered in blood.
Okay.
And I don't know if there were two. There's no explanation. It's just, I'm not sure.
Holy shit.
So, but then also, he left a letter to the owner of the car that said, my dear Michael. So he basically borrows this car from this guy. He's like, hey, can I borrow your car for a while? And then just gets blood all in it, abandons it. And
he's crazy.
Leaves. And he says, my dear Michael, I have had a traumatic night of unbelievable coincidence. However,
have you?
I won't bore you with anything or involve you except to say that when you come across my children, which I hope you will, please tell them that you knew me and that all I cared about was them. The fact that a crooked solicitor and a rotten psychiatrist destroyed me between them will be of no importance to the children. I gave Bill Shand Kid, which is his brother-in-law, I gave Bill Shand Kid an account of what actually happened, but judging by my last effort in court, no one, yet alone a 67-year-old judge, would believe, and I no longer care, except that my children should be protected. Yours ever, John. So he's basically saying whatever happened at the house was some weird coincidence that he happened upon.
Mm-hmm.
His excuse is that, and I think it was in a different letter, that he walked into the house and his wife was being attacked by an intruder, which the wife is like, no, I'll tell you exactly how it happened, like step by step.
Yeah.
And then also you can trace it all back to the car and the blood and everything else.
Point the fucking way.
So they put out a warrant for his arrest a couple days later. And in his absence, the inquest into Rivet's death named him as her murderer, which was the last time ever that Britain's coroner's court was ever allowed to do that. So they were basically like, this guy did it.
Oh, which you can't do a trial. Yeah.
So a thorough search of New Haven Downs was judged impossible. I don't know if that's... What's New Haven Downs?
What's a thorough search?
What's anything in this fucking world?
What is life?
I pictured New Haven Downs to be just full of a bunch of brambles.
Charming as fuck.
It's like the moors, but brambly.
Brambles everywhere.
Brambles and scones?
gone.
A partial search was made using tracker dogs, although all that was found were the skeletal remains of a judge who had disappeared years earlier.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. What?
Yes. Yes. So when they do search New Haven Downs, this impossible to search area, they find...
Unrelated.
Clearly. They find skeletal remains of a judge. All right. Maybe. How about once a year you search New Haven Downs?
Get some fucking puppies out there.
They love doing it.
Give them a run around.
It's fun for them.
Find a judge.
Police divers searched the harbor. So basically they went everywhere and tried to find this guy.
This guy's more important than a fucking judge.
That's right.
Clearly.
He's a way bigger deal.
Yeah.
He is among the top 10 backgammon players in the world. You have to find him.
Must find him.
They don't find. So basically they can't find anything. They used infrared photography.
They use smart cars.
Smartphones. So a warrant for Lucan's arrest to answer charges of murdering Sandra Rivett and attempting to murder his wife was issued on Tuesday, November 12th, 1974. And descriptions of his appearance were issued to Interpol. So it could be Internacional.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all across the UK. So apparently since that time been a great British pastime to theorize where Lord Lucan is. And people love saying they saw him places. So the reports have been coming in pretty consistently year after year.
Oh my God.
Saying I saw Lord Lucan here or there. And so some of the places they have reported him seeing him was as a hippie dropout in Goa, which I don't know.
No.
I don't know where that is.
Doubt.
Where he was known, they said he was known there as Jungle Barry.
As you do.
It's the best nickname of all time.
Is it?
They said he was about backpacking on Mount Etna. Someone said they saw him working on a sheep station in the Australian outback.
Yeah. Those all sound like things people who run away from life would do.
Yeah, to get as far away as possible.
Yeah, who like trying to not have an identity anymore.
Right, which would make sense.
Yeah.
But John Aspinall, who was the owner of the Claremont Gaming Club, which is the place he used to go like around lunchtime every single day, said, told the news, I find it difficult to imagine him in Brazil or Haiti as a fugitive. I don't think he has the capacity to adapt. Which is kind of rough. There was also a rumor. Aspinall owned a private zoo. And so there was a rumor that he was cut up and fed to the tigers at that zoo. And Aspinall, when told that rumor, responded, my tigers are only fed the choicest cuts. Do you really think they're going to eat stringy old Lucky?
Oh my God.
And the most plausible theory is that he drowned himself in the channel.
Yeah.
That's what most people think.
Yeah.
But this is just an interesting, another coincidental thing. 13 years later, so when they had that nanny, Sandra Rivett was their nanny, but they had had a nanny right before her, and her name was Christabel. I can't find her last name.
Bell.
Christabel Bell. you don't see it. But her name was Christabel something or other. And turns out she was married to an economist named Nicholas Boyce. And on October 10th, 1985, Nicholas Boyce was sent to prison for dismembering his wife and dumping her pieces of her body around London. So it was her. The nanny... One before this.
Oh, one she got cut up.
Also was murdered by her fancy husband.
So fancy husbands are just fucking running amok.
Which I thought was, and also they convicted him of manslaughter, but not murder. And he was sentenced to 6 years in jail.
Oh, that's no big deal. Manslaughter.
No big. Just kill her and throw her arms and legs around the city. And then,
cannot.
That's the story. Oh, sorry. It was Christabel 32 was a former governess of the children of Lord Lucan who vanished without a trace after another nanny was battered to death at his home.
Do you think he did it?
What, killed?
Lucan or whatever the fuck?
Killed the second nanny?
The first nanny.
Oh, hell yes.
Wait, both nannies?
No. The second one got killed by her husband.
Oh, okay. Later. Okay.
That was later on. 13 years later, second nanny gets killed in what is a coincidence, but is super creepy because what the fuck is going on?
I thought it was the first. Okay.
Yeah, I know. But the first, I'm sure the way everything adds up, it's just basically where did he go after? Did he immediately kill himself or did he actually go?
He's D.B. Cooper.
Yeah. Right? Did he shave that luxuriant mustache off and go live somewhere for a while?
You could go anywhere you want back then.
And also with all his money.
Oh, bye.
And charming and, you know, dapper. He probably went to like Monte Carlo or something.
That's what I was thinking too. How old is he now? How old would he be? Is he dead?
He's dead now. He was proclaimed to be dead.
No, but like how old would he be?
Like in his, the article that I said where they proclaimed him dead, I think they said he was like would have been 81 or 82.
That's livable, especially if you're living the fucking backgammon high life in fucking Monte Carlo.
Backgammon doesn't take that much out of you.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And if you're just pickled with gin, you can live for a really long time.
I bet you he's still alive.
I mean, it'd be pretty cool.
We should make a rule that people have to confess stuff on their death, like on their deathbed. They have to confess things.
Yeah.
Like you're not. Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Wouldn't it?
Just to solve a couple mysteries.
Yeah, like don't take shit to your grave.
Yeah.
You're being a selfish dick.
So that's my good times.
That was amazing.
High class murder mystery from England.
Never heard that one.
Please let us know all the mistakes from that one as soon as you can.
Or England. Don't. Or go, you know, every time you get mad at this podcast, go give $3 to Wikipedia.
We're going to solve all of Wikipedia's problems.
Wikipedia's going to be like,
they're going to be like, thank you.
We got an influx of thousands and thousands of dollars.
So much money.
Oh, I love that story. Just privilege on full display. Thank you so much for listening. Again, you can find me as the co-host of I Saw What You Did podcast here on the Exactly Right Network with Millie DeCirico. I just wrote a book. It's called The Ugly Cry. It's out now. And don't forget to stay sexy and don't get murdered.
Elvis, do you want a cookie?